You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. I am Captain Dean, and my guest today is the guitarist of the band Chest Rockwell, which is also Peter the Freshman, and he is also the guitarist of the band El Astronauta, which just so happens to be the band I am in. And Seth, I don't know if you know this, but I host a podcast.
You host a podcast?
I do.
Wow.
And I would like for you to be a guest on it.
I am so honored.
And ladies and gentlemen, Seth Wilson, welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you. How's it going, everybody?
They said hi.
Hey.
I could see him waving through the window.
I'll be waving at myself when I'm listening to this later.
Yes, you will. You do listen to all these episodes.
Every week.
And you give me shit for every single one of them.
Every one of them, yes.
Because I have brain farts and I don't know anything about equipment. And golly, I could literally go on and on about all the fun things you have had to say.
It makes my Mondays just a little bit better at work.
Well, Seth, I met you years ago in, I think, 2004, 2005.
Yeah, somewhere around
so
there,
I believe.
So that's
been a while, even though you wouldn't think 2005 was that long ago. It actually was. And we've crossed paths over the years, but we've only been working together for a few years now.
Yep.
And you've become one of my closest friends and a wonderful musician to work with. And thank you for that.
Stop now. You're
going to
make me,
blush. I got to get all that out of the way because, you know, people need to know.
You're going to make me blush over here.
But you know what time it is, and it's time to get this machine rolling here. Seth Wilson, where are you from?
I was born in Mount Carmel, Illinois.
Ah.
Lived there until I was about 13, and then moved to my dad in Harrodsburg, Kentucky. And I went to, that's where I lived until I moved to Bowling Green when I came to college in 1998.
And where is that located?
Harrodsburg, Kentucky is Mercer County. It's up around Lexington, like,
oh.
just a tad bit southwest of Lexington. So, like,
okay.
30
minutes. I was thinking so. I know I've been through it or heard of it, but. I knew it was. I was thinking it was up in the eastern side.
It's just it's like the bluegrass area of the
yes.
state from the bluegrass.
It is the eastern south of Cincinnati part.
it's where a bunch of the horses are.
Yes, lots of horses. And you lived there for how long?
I lived there from like when I was 13, and then when I graduated high school when I was 18, moved to Bowling Green.
Okay.
And never really went back.
And home. You said that was in 98?
Yep, 98.
So,
I'm an old man.
Yeah, you really are. When did you get into music and how did all that start for you?
Well, like, unfortunately, I didn't come from a musical family other than, like, the, you know, passing, listening to music in the car or whatever with my parents.
Right.
But the whole grunge movement when it happened, like Nirvana and all that stuff back in the day, like, I started listening to Nirvana and started diving into other bands and, you know, started to appreciate music that way.
Right.
Columbia House, I'm sure there's some people out there that remember that. I'm pretty sure I still owe them some money.
I think they're okay.
So
the bankruptcy paid for it, right?
Hope they don't track me down because, you know, I lived out in the county, so I lived out in the sticks and got a bunch of my music through Columbia House. And, you know, we didn't have cable or satellite or anything
right.
at the time, so my experience was limited to what I could find on there.
That's true. And thank God for stuff like that.
Yep.
And magazines and, you know, occasionally you'd catch something from just a passing friend or whatever about a band and it would turn you on to this other band. And, you know, the domino effect of how music kind of just walks into your life unexpectedly.
Yeah.
So clearly that happened with you.
Yeah. We lived way, like I said, we lived in the sticks. We lived on the lake. And so we had... When I was moved to Kentucky, we lived on the lake, and there was no like one other kid on our road. So, you know, we would play basketball or do whatever kids do, but I had to spend a lot of time with myself and a lot of time with adults just due to the nature of the neighborhood. And
right.
So a lot of time spent listening to music. And
which explains the get off my lawn movement that you're going through now, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a passage. We all get there. But when did you discover guitar? I mean, I've never seen you play another instrument. I'm assuming that's your main thing.
I can play bass as well as any other guitarist could play bass.
Right.
Whatever. That's not really a bass player.
I've never seen you hold anything other than
it's
a guitar.
It's just that the guitar is the instrument. I got a guitar when I was 16 years old. I'd go back and visit my mom. I went back to visit her during Christmas one time, and you know, one of my friends up there that I'd had since I was 5 years old and still kept in touch with, and would go see and hang out with him when I would go back to visit her. He had gotten a guitar and an amp for Christmas. I was like, well, that's pretty cool. I want a guitar. So, you know, my mom took me and bought me a guitar for Christmas when I was 16.
Nice.
And then that's when I started. Got back to home to Kentucky and had my room in the basement and just spent weekends in the basement with my best friend, Ray. And we would just play guitar and try to figure out how to play songs and just listen to music.
So pretty self-taught, though. Yeah, you didn't get lessons or anything.
All self-taught.
You mentioned Nirvana. What else around that time came to you and inspired you to play and I guess maybe eventually start writing your own stuff?
Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots, Alice
so very
in
much
Chains,
the 90s movement.
Like,
yeah.
Totally. And then starting getting into like Smashing Pumpkins was my favorite band. Siamese Dream, Melancholy, Infinite Sadness, like those were me and Ray. That was our favorite band, and that's like what we listened to a lot.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known that.
As you said
before we started rolling, you're going to learn a lot of stuff about me you don't know. I wouldn't have expected you to be a Smashing Pumpkins fan.
Oh, that was the best, man. Like just the interplay between the guitars, and even though Billy played it all,
right?
Whatever.
And you know, I get that. I said this to someone else the other day, not that long ago, or whatever last interview I did. I was like, I liked Siamese Dream, but I kind of lost connection with them on the Melancholy record, and I saw them on that tour.
Yeah,
and I was like, it was still cool, but I had this home video of the Siamese Dream stuff, like tour stuff, and it was outstanding. Like it was great, super raw and just outstanding stuff. And then I had the EP that came out after that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
they did Landslide on it and all that stuff. It was great.
Like Martin Apples or something.
But there was just this video, and I was like, it was really good. But I completely lost them on that Melancholy.
When they started getting into the whole techno.
I guess
he started going that direction. Like some of it's really cool, but some of it I start kind of losing it there.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, like Siamese Dream, top five albums of all time for me.
Yeah, it's great.
Siamese Dream.
It definitely still holds for me too. I'm drinking my coffee.
Sitting in Captain Dean's house, and I don't have a taco, and I don't have any grape soda. I don't know what's going on.
It's not Tuesday. You should have been here on a Tuesday.
I messed up.
It's coffee Saturday. Which is really pathetic. I shouldn't be drinking coffee at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But
man,
we have a show later, so I'm getting ready.
I do it. I drink coffee throughout the day. Sometimes.
I do too. I'm just fucking around. So yeah, you're a few years younger than me, so that makes sense that the '90s movement hit you pretty hard.
Yeah.
As a teenager, because I was kind of the tail end of the hair glam stuff. You know, I was old enough to start going to shows when that was still big and dominant on MTV. So
I remember like the first concert I ever went to, 1996, and you know,
it's
somehow,
so long ago.
Yeah, somehow we got tickets and we were in general admission in the pit. So my first concert ever was Rupp Arena in the pit, and it was Bush and Goo Goo Dolls when they still played electric guitar.
Yeah,
and No Doubt. And so you know, that was a pretty cool experience.
Like, I saw No Doubt on 96 tour. They weren't with Bush, though.
Pretty cool first concert experience, because that was Bush's, you know, that album was a pretty great album, 16 Stone.
Yeah, a few people I've talked to have mentioned that. And again, that's just, I was old enough at that point where I was like, I didn't care much for that. The late 90s stuff, or the mid to late 90s stuff, didn't do as much for me as the early 90s. There was something about that rawness. And then things got really watered down, I think, in producing and oversaturation with record companies looking for the next band, you know. And same thing happened in hair metal.
Yeah, same thing that happens every time.
It does.
It's just a vicious cycle.
It's how the decades work.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense, though, for you to say all that. What inspired you to, like, say, I want to do this. I want to be a guitar player. I want to be in a band.
I mean, I just was hanging out with some friends at school. You know, one of them had actually moved from Seattle to Kentucky for some reason. His dad, like,
he had the real stuff.
Yeah. So his dad, for some whatever job, I don't even know, but, you know, spent a lot of time over there. And we had a couple other friends that, you know, played bass and played drums. And so we just started practicing and played, I think we, that band played one show.
And what was the name of it?
That band was called Opal Burn.
Nice.
And then
the first bands are always the best names.
Well, the funny thing is, like, there was me and Dan, who was the kid from Seattle, and then the drummer and the bass player, and, like, for some reason, as kids do, we all got in an argument, and the band kind of split. You know, me and Dan went our way, and they went their
way. And
that
still happens today.
It happens all the time. And me and Dan found another drummer and another bass player and continued playing, and, you know, we're sitting in the house trying to figure out what we're going to name the band after, you know, the Opal Burn split. And there's a show on, like, Discovery Channel or something called Curse of the Cocaine Mummies. So the name of my second band was Curse of the Cocaine Mummies.
That's great. That's a damn good name.
And so we, COCM for short, you know.
Of course.
So, and I think that band played one show.
Gotta
as
make
well,
the bumper so. Sticker yeah. With the you know, abbreviated name.
And, you know, I remember we, like, somehow we recorded, like, a practice or something, as you do with a tape recorder. And one of the neighbors at the at my house out by the lake was actually, like, a professional musician in Lexington and played with the orchestra and stuff as a bass player and, like, whatever. And I'd, like, listen, you know, like, hey, man, check this out. Check out our stuff. You know, at the time, he was like, yeah, man, that's good. You guys are on beat. And I'm like, yeah, it's a good compliment. But looking back, I'm thinking, wow, he just said we're on beat. That's not really much of a compliment. I don't think he dug it that much.
Well, I think anybody like that would at least see the talent and at least applaud it. You know,
yeah,
if
I
it's
mean,
crap, at least you're like, at least you're doing something.
And I probably still have a tape of that somewhere if I can find it, but I don't think I want to find it. So
you might want to find it.
Know.
Put it out there. People need to hear this stuff, no. man. You're no, behind the music. We'll need it. They'll need the photos and the proof.
I don't think there are any photos, actually.
Of course. You hate pictures. Let's point that out real quick.
I do.
This is why we don't have band photos.
I
force you to take them.
It takes pieces of my soul.
And
every
see,
time.
Chest Rockwell doesn't have band photos. You all have, like, Matt does paintings and drawings of you guys. So, lucky you.
Yeah. There's a few photos of us that Josh's sister has done for us.
Yeah, I've seen some. Yeah, but there's not many.
Hey,
it's one of the highlights of being in the band with you.
Yes.
But go to, from that and you're starting out, like, how many bands or just musicians in general did you go through prior to getting to Bowling Green?
Well, I had those two bands in high school, and, you know, after high school, you go to college or whatever. That's just, you know, what you're supposed, quote unquote, supposed to do,
quotation marks.
You know, I don't really agree with that much anymore.
I didn't do
but
that.
That's what I did, and when I came away to college, I kind of put all that down. And didn't really play. And then, you know, I got to the point where I was working full-time, going to school full-time, and partying full-time. Couldn't do all three of those full-time, so one of them had to go.
It's too bad you can't party at work.
And so I quit school and just, you know, was hanging out and meeting people and eventually met a couple, like a drummer named Ben through working at AFNI or whatever when I did a long time ago. And we started kind of trying to jam a little bit, and then there's a name that Marcus McNeese.
Yeah.
You've heard a few times.
Yep.
Somehow Ben met him, and we started hanging out. And, like,
now Marcus, you know, is not here anymore, right?
No, I think he's in Colorado or something.
That's what I thought.
And, you know, some people have issues with him, and there's a lot of, I'm not even sure, like, what all went on. There's an interesting period in my life.
I know him, but I don't know him enough to know any of that.
He was
but.
A fantastic musician.
I recall.
And I did learn, like, you know, learn a lot from him as far as, you know, playing guitar and the musicianship type of stuff.
But, right.
You know, that's
in the past. And that was when you came here, right?
But that was after I'd been here for a couple of years.
Okay.
And I'd put guitar down when I came to college in about 2001, 2002.
Gotcha.
I picked it back up and started playing again. And then,
you know, now that you tell me where you're from, it makes sense of your UK fandom.
Yeah.
That makes sense now.
Yeah.
Because anybody that's from that area,
bleeds blue, man.
It's like you're born, or you're adapted into that world, you know. Since you weren't born there, but raised there, that makes sense.
It's
so good. I like these conversations.
Part of the DNA.
Wildcat fans are better to interview when you are one.
yeah, that's true.
I too bleed the blue. But anyway, this isn't about sports, is it?
No.
Sports
I'm not very good at sports.
If we had a sports show, nobody would listen.
Or maybe more, who would, you don't know.
No, because then you get into stats and all that stupid shit, and you have to pretend like you know what you're talking about. You know. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
So Ben and Matt.
Yeah, or Marcus.
Marcus, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then, you know, whatever. That never really panned out. That was more just hanging out, jamming, and doing things.
Okay.
When you're younger. And
now, what was going on at that time that you got here? Did you go out and catch anybody?
No, or see I was any just bands like, or? I was just lived in the dorm and, you know,
but you didn't go out to
and
clubs
and
or
we
anywhere.
Just went. I was too young, man. We just went.
Oh, party, you weren't 21.
Went to house parties and went, you know, had
did
friends.
Did you see any
parties.
Bands at the time?
No, like music wasn't even a part of my life.
You didn't
really.
Go to anything at night class or
like,
nothing?
I mean, no. We'd go to concerts in Nashville sometimes or Louisville every once in a while, like big concerts, but. As far as local music scene, I was oblivious to that whole.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of sucks.
And now you're all over it.
Wish I would have been more.
Well,
into
and
it
you know a lot of people in the local scene that have been playing since that time.
Yeah.
So I was kind of expecting to hear that you met Cody through Pilot or you met so and so through this band or that venue, but none of that happened.
No.
Okay, so Marcus and Ben and you were jamming.
Yeah.
What did that evolve into?
That evolved into nothing, really.
Okay.
I was, like I said, we were working at AFNI, and there was a dude there that had dreadlocks, like, you know, down halfway down his back. And I met him.
It's the only way.
His name was Aaron Phelps. I'm like, man, are you a musician? He's like, yeah, man, I play drums.
Man, I'm a musician and a sell weed.
Well, no, he was like almost straight edge, really.
Well, that's cool. You know what I mean.
He was like, yeah, I play drums.
I totally just profiled the dreadlock guy.
You did.
I'm sorry.
And
dreadlock people usually can pull buds out of their hair. It's like
I don't know anything about
that. It's fascinating.
So I found out he played drums and they had a band, but apparently like they had two guitar players and they weren't happy with either of their guitar players.
Do you blame them?
No, because guitar players suck.
They're terrible people.
And so somehow I got myself out there to the house to jam with them, and there was another guy, Derek, who showed up to jam, who was like a mutual friend of theirs that was out there to jam. And actually, that's how I met Nick Stewart, or Stewie, who's in Chess Rockwell, the bass player. He was the bass player.
I actually talked
band.
To Nick this morning. Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because we had something to talk about. Oh, okay. I absolutely love talking to him. He's like one of the highlight conversations to have with a human being is to know someone like him.
Yeah, he's, you know, one of my best friends.
He really is. And I've just kind of recently got to know him again, it's like I've known a lot of you guys for a long time, but I've never been close to any of you.
Yeah.
And I've recently got to hang out with you and Josh and Nick, and it's been a blast. But
Rouse is the enigma, so he's always going to be the enigma. He's the enigma to us half the time, too. So
I've talked to Rouse. He's cool.
Yeah. That's why I've been in a band with him for 14 years.
I know. But anyway, so, I'm sorry. This is how these work. You know how these work.
So found dreadlock guy, Aaron Phelps, and they had a band. Me and this other guy showed up to jam. Funny thing is the other two guitar players lived in the house with him. But they weren't really mad about it because, you know, we started jamming and we formed a band and like...
It was their out.
Yeah, I guess it was their out. And that band became my hostage heart back in my screamo emo days. So it was kind of like a screamo emo type of band. You know, we played night class a lot with that band.
Yeah.
Because we were friends with the guy who ran night class.
Yeah,
so he got us in all the time.
I was not attending much at that point.
Yeah, that was back in the screamo emo days of night class.
Yeah.
And, you know, saw a bunch of cool bands there then, and we played there quite a few times, and we played a couple other places in Indianapolis.
And again, this was what, 2001, 2002?
It was probably like 2003.
Okay.
Maybe 2002, 2003. And at some point, like, you know, we've been doing that for maybe a year, whatever. And I think like Mike, who was the singer, and Aaron, like they decided to move to Berea. Like Mike was going to Berea, and like it just as things happen, people move on with their life, and it split up. And after that, I didn't really have anything else going on. And you know, no real prospects. And there was somehow I met this guy named Jonah Coel, who was like, it's really like, I mean, he was an awesome singer songwriter, just playing acoustic guitar and stuff. And I had a computer and a microphone, this little thing to kind of record with.
That sounds exactly like my setup.
It does
right here.
A little bit, except it actually wasn't as good as your setup. So think about that for a while.
Well, I've got a Fostex 4-track under my desk here if you want to use
it. I used to have a Tascam 4-track, but anyway. So I met this dude, Jonah Coyle, who, you know, was like kind of an acoustic singer songwriter guy. Like, you know, he was really into Bright Eyes, and he was had really interesting music, and like he was.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Yeah, go for it.
What's Bright Eyes?
Bright Eyes is just like a emo, like band from way back in the, like back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I'm already that old. I'm so old, I don't even know that band.
Yeah,
from so long ago.
And like I tried to record Jonah. You know, we were trying to record him some stuff. And, you know, he got a gig here or there, so I'd play bass for him, like, during the gigs, like, you know.
Where at?
We played Bread and Bagel once.
Yeah.
And then I think JD and Ed Fred used to have, like, an apartment above.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whatever. I think we played up there once. Mm-hmm. And not that we did a whole lot or really did anything with it, but we did a couple
right.
things.
Just something.
And then I kept trying to record him, but, you know, he would not think it was good enough, and we would have to just keep going. So we never really got anything down either. but we tried a lot. And then somehow I met your cousin.
Yes.
Jason.
And this
Bayes,
is how we met.
And I have no idea how I met him. I don't recall at all how I met him.
Yeah. Well, Jason Bayes is my I would say in technical terms he is my second or third cousin, but we are related. But we aren't super close.
Yeah.
You know, there was a moment growing up where we did see each other quite a bit, but we're kind of distant in age and, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, he ran with a different crowd, but he was very musically active.
Yeah.
At the same time that I kind of was, but we went totally different direction musically speaking. And the reason I met you
well,
is because
I'm going to tell the story in a minute.
I know, but I'm just saying I met you at where I worked, yes. Because Jason came in to see me one night, and yeah. You were with him, and that's how we met. Now tell the world what an asshole I am, I'll retaliate.
like I said, I don't remember how I met Jason at all. Like, we just...
You just said you didn't do drugs, so how do you not know?
I don't know, man.
Maybe like, that one night.
That we just ran to somewhere, like, some... I don't know how we got, like, musically connected or whatever. But we used my little computer setup to record a few songs with me and him.
Right.
And then eventually, you know, formed a little band, like a band. But my meeting Captain Dean story, it was called Suicide Killed the Ghost.
I like it.
That was his, and like, he came up with it. And
you can't kill a ghost, can you?
No, I don't think
so. You can trap them?
Maybe, in like the ectoplasm. And put him in a containment unit that the EPA shuts down. And
the EPA shuts it down because the mayor doesn't know about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad we're referencing Ghostbusters 2 in this. Or was it 1?
It was 1.
I guess it was 1. Fucking Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
I'm glad we're talking about Ghostbusters. But Suicide Killed the Ghost.
The Ghost. It was and like an indie-style band. Yeah. Jason's a good singer-songwriter.
Jason is an outstanding musician. And I was really, like, rooting for him, even though I wasn't, like, we weren't forming, like, a family band or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was really, I had kind of, like, applauding him from the sidelines. Like, come on, man, you can do this. You know, you're good.
I mean, that band was really cool because I didn't want to play the same thing that he was playing all the time. So it really made me,
that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it does. It really made me stretch my boundaries as far as, you know, starting to come up with melody lines on guitar and, like, you know, kind of solos and just, you know, the fluff on top of the rhythm guitar.
You said that the other day at band practice, and it really triggered some terrible thoughts for my head to
I don't think
of you
know
as a fluffer, but go ahead.
Whatever. So, you know, like, that band was instrumental in, you know, forming my current guitar style, I guess.
Okay.
We played Spencer's Coffee Shop a lot back in the day when they had shows, like, you know, that place would be packed out with people.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an awesome scene back then.
I still wonder why Spencer's doesn't have music anymore. But then again,
yeah, it was.
I don't blame
them. I don't either. Like, they're too nice now. It's too nice
it
of a place.
It is very nice. I mean, it would
now
be okay, but
music.
It's probably just the burden of dealing with the mediocre people that heckle you to death to get booked, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, there used to be great shows at the Java House.
Yeah.
And it was weird. Like, I would see better shows at the the coffee houses than I would in the clubs sometimes, you know.
It just depends.
Like on a given night, you could go to State Street Pub, the Java House, or Spencer's, and usually the better bands were at Spencer's or whatever, because they were usually underage and more raw, you know, punk band type things or whatever.
But yeah, like that. So the Captain Dean, meeting Captain Dean story.
Yeah,
here we go. So me and Jason were running around one night. He's like, "Hey man, let's go to this Kroger. My cousin works here." I'm like, "All right, let's go." And so we went in there and run into you like up front somewhere, and we're talking to you, and he's like, "Yeah,
I vaguely remember this too, because like, I'd been sober for a second.
I got a new guitar." And you're like, "Yeah, what'd you get?" He's like, "I got an Ibanez." He's like, "Man," Captain Dean goes, "man, you don't need no Ibanez guitar. What do you think you're doing getting an Ibanez guitar? Like, that's not your style. What are you doing?" I'm like, and in my mind, I'm thinking, what kind of asshole is this, man? He doesn't even know what's going on. And, you know, for the record, the Ibanez guitar that Jason had got was one of those hollow body,
I thought he got like a Steve Vai or a Paul Gilbert. Yeah,
it wasn't like a flat neck, you know, shredding Wizard 3 neck.
But here's why, I reacted poorly to this. Because my cousin Jason had access to beautiful vintage equipment.
But you don't want
to
slum
like,
that around the coffee
don't
shop.
Don't you want to play the Les Paul from, you know, whatever it is, like a 59 Les Paul? Why would you pick an Ibanez over a 59 Les Paul? But that was when I was going through that phase of only vintage gear is worth owning.
I think you were bitter
playing
with life at that point too, weren't you? You were a little bitter with life at that point.
Yeah, right? Because I had my music career fell apart in Nashville, and I had to move back to Bowling Green and hang out with fucking people like you in a grocery store.
Hey, it could have been worse.
It could have been worse, but dude, I was young, and yeah, I was somewhat bitter, but I just, you know, I still had the dream, and I definitely thought he had potential because he's younger than me, and if I couldn't make it, I wanted to see my friends make it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't going to be bitter if people I knew succeeded. So I was hoping he would be in a band around here that did well, you know. And I knew it was possible.
Yeah.
This is years before bands exploded from this
like this
area.
This was the era of MySpace. I remember having the Suicide Kill the Ghost, or the SKTG, as we called it. Because, you
course,
know, we like
the bumpers.
MySpace page and having the songs up on there and all that stuff. Back then.
That's your story, and that's my reasoning for saying it. And I was very young and stupid, and you were a little bit younger and probably not as stupid. But anyway,
so
that's how we met.
Yeah, that's the Captain Dean.
But we
Captain
did
Dean
run
story.
Into each other later on through the years.
Yeah,
and again, it's like we didn't really hang out. We just knew a lot of the same people, and obviously the music scene is pretty close knit.
Yeah,
but luckily that was a horrible first impression, and you don't hold that to me to this day.
Not very often.
But you do like to bring it up.
Yeah. On occasion.
So you and Jason, like you said, jammed a little bit. It never really evolved into much.
Well, we had that band. Like, we formed a band, got Aaron from the My House's Heart days to drum for us, and this dude, this fantastic bass player, his name's Colby Braden.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, you know, really the best musician in the band. Got him, and you know, we played a few shows here and there, Spencer's Coffee Shop. You know, we played in Russellville here and there. And as bands do, this one fell apart. Like, you know, Aaron moved on to wherever he moved on to. Colby decided to move back home. You know, was left with me and Jason. And I get a phone call one day from Nick Stewart from Stewie, saying, "Hey man, we need another guitar player. You want to come jam and try out?" I'm like, you know, he was in Chess Rockwell at this point.
And they existed prior to
they existed. Josh played acoustic guitar, Stewie played bass, and Rouse was drumming. And they had just recorded like their first full length, and there was a bunch of extra guitar stuff put on it in the studio. And they needed someone else to come in and kind of add those parts back into it for the live sound.
Right, and that
was,
I have that.
Yeah, you do.
That because Josh pointed that out to me. He's like, half the record is this band or what, and then the other half you're on.
Well, the first record I'm not on.
Right. But there is something that it's like you're on half of it, I think, no. or something.
Like that record, like Chris Hightower, who was the singer for Commander that Josh was in,
right.
played a bunch of extra guitar stuff on there.
Okay.
And I just kind of came in and filled in.
Okay. I knew there was some story. I'm sorry, Josh.
No, sorry.
And, I really pay attention sometimes.
So, you know, I guess this was... You know, Chess Rockwell was playing the Spencers and all that stuff, too.
Yeah.
And I guess I joined them. It's been 2005, so it's been 14 years. Because they were a band for a year, a little bit over a year before I joined.
Easily one of the longest-lasting yeah. bands, which, again, we'll touch on that. But Chess Rockwell is Peter the Freshman.
Yes.
Peter the Freshman is your alter ego... Doing yeah. covers, 90s covers mostly.
Yes.
But I saw you recently, and you have this 90s country bit. But for the most part, it's 90s covers of our stuff. Yeah. yeah, alternative.
Stuff I listened to that I got from Columbia. I was yeah. listening to in high school.
that you still owe money for.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, that band never went away.
No.
It's just you all found a way to start booking gigs that yeah. paid. As a cover band, because we know how this area works. You got to be a cover band and make money.
We got how many? Like, we did two or three albums with me on it. I don't know.
I've got three in front of me, and then I've got the 45 down there.
So we did a couple albums with me on it. You know, like, and
you're a phenomenal band.
Somehow I influenced Josh and got him to put down the acoustic guitar and pick up an electric guitar, and now he's got a pedal board that's bigger than mine. You know, he started out with two pedals and an acoustic guitar playing yeah. through bass amps.
But again, Josh, and you know, yeah. Josh had an episode and he talks about his history and stuff. Yeah. He is so active and it blows my mind how he can do it. But, you know, I understand, all, you know, he doesn't have kids. He doesn't have a lot of things that a lot of us do. And therefore, he can do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he is extremely musical and has obviously played bass in this band and drums in that band. But yep. this has been the main band for you guys for a long time.
Yeah.
It's with all these other side projects, which you didn't have a lot of side projects, I guess, until you met me
yeah, pretty much.
Recently. But I know Josh does a lot of stuff on the side.
Yeah, he's a busy fella.
Yeah. But Jessica only sings in Peter the Freshman,
right,
correct?
Yeah, this was her first.
That was her first, like, band.
Yeah.
Outing, but anyway, so Chess Rockwell existed and you got into it.
Yes.
And at that point they'd only made the one record.
Yeah.
So you kind of got into it and things changed and evolved into pretty much what is playing
behind us, yeah,
in the background of what we were doing right now.
Yeah.
And you say that was about 2005.
Yeah, I think I joined 2000, like late 2005.
Okay. And even though I didn't know you guys very well personally, the name was constantly out there. It was on flyers. It was in the amplifier. It was as far as Bowling Green music scene goes, that name was very dominant in the music scene for a long time.
Yeah, we played a lot of shows to some people, a lot of shows to no people.
Yeah.
A couple shows to a lot of people.
Sounds like the music industry.
I mean, we can always say we've driven farther to play for less people. And
yeah.
Like, one funny story from that is we had a show in Lexington, like on a Friday night, and then a show in Bloomington, Indiana on that Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And so we drove to Lexington, played the show for like the other band and maybe one or two friends that we had in Lexington.
Those are the best.
You know,
those are called band practice.
Yeah, pretty much. And we stayed at a friend's house that we had in Lexington, and we drove the next day to Bloomington, Indiana. And guess what? We were booked with the same band that we had just played with the night before, and we played to them, and they played to us. And that was, you know.
And you all just gave each other money?
Like, we just loaded up, drove home. I mean, it was a fun weekend. We had fun time. Like,
right.
It was just hanging out with the friends.
It's easy to do when you're young.
Yeah.
It really is.
Now it would piss me off. If I did something like that now, I would be pissed.
We just did it not that long ago.
And I'd be like, you know.
But we had a good time.
There were more people at that show than there was.
But we got paid.
Yeah.
Which was a nice gesture. But you insisted on driving, and it was a two-hour drive.
Yeah. Which, that's not really that bad. It wasn't that bad.
No, it's not like driving to Indianapolis, but, you know. But it still happens.
Yeah.
But we're a new band, and we're paying our dues as a new band, correct?
Yep.
So tell me about Chest Rockwell overall. Like, once you got in, obviously the band, like I said, was extremely dominant. You did a lot of recording. I mean, a lot of recording. Not in terms of album releases, but songs. Like, you guys have so many songs as an original band.
Yeah.
And we can't forget that Matt does the artwork for you guys. And Simone, I'm sorry. I always do that when I see his name. I'm so sorry, Matt. He'll smack me next time I see him.
He will.
Why did I say I knew that? Because he even said something along the lines of, you know, it's like, see, this is it. This is what you listened for, right?
Exactly, right.
Exactly,
here.
Right here. Anyway, he said something to somebody about how to pronounce his name. Oh, Matt did his sound atlas with Tommy Starr. Yeah. I'm pretty sure at some point he said something about how his name is pronounced. And that's what I'm coming out of confusion. It's there.
You're always confused.
And he said something. And I don't remember what it was.
What was that bass player's name again? I don't remember.
Yeah, well, you know. But anyway, Matt Simone does the artwork on just about pretty much everything, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good relationship on local speaking.
Yeah, he's a real great friend of ours. And
it's just great stuff to look at, too.
Overall, I mean, great dude.
It's worthy of framing everything he's done.
Which Josh has, yes.
Yeah. Well, of course. Josh has the originals, I'm sure.
Yeah. I have one original from the back cover, but that's only because I have that tattoo on me. So
very good.
Of this one.
You have that? Yes, you do. That's amazing.
So, only Matt Simone
tattoo. Did you see it? It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. Right here, guys, right here.
So, again, where I'm going with all this is on a local music scene note, you use a local artist, you have done a lot of recordings, and you've played a lot in this scene. Obviously, since the formation of this band, or since you've joined this band, Tidballs was clearly your home.
Yes.
Tidballs opened in 2001. You've been in the band since 2005. I'm pretty sure that was the dominating venue for you guys to be at. But back then, Night Class was still open. I'm assuming you played Java House or maybe State Street.
We played Java House. We played State Street.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that mid-90s
era. I don't think we ever did Night Class, actually. I don't think I ever did Night Class.
Night Class...
Because they got kind of weird.
I think it was there, but it wasn't doing that stuff anymore. But
we played Western. Like,
after 2000, probably 5 or 6, I think, is when it started to really die.
Like, Western used to have a lot of on-campus stuff.
Yes, they did.
And we used to play that stuff all the time.
Yeah. And they still do. It's just, but you literally have to be in school to know who to talk to and to book and everything.
So we played at Western on campus a lot. Like, they used to do shows in front of the library.
Right.
And like, in the middle of the day, like at noon.
Yeah.
And we used to play those
all the
time.
Didn't Jack book those?
I think my first show with Chest Rockwell was one of those like noon shows.
In front of the Helm Library. That's funny.
And that was my first like show with Chest Rockwell.
Not a bad one to have.
No, not really.
So how do you sum up 14 years of being in the same band that splits personalities between original, which when did you start doing the cover stuff?
Maybe even 3 or 4 years.
It hasn't been that long, right?
Like we... got to where we started writing and got writer's block and we were just getting frustrated and it was just, you know, like the pressure we put on ourselves to write another album or whatever. And like, we just, you know what, we should do this. We should just take a break and we don't want to stop playing with each other because, you know, those are my best friends in the world. You know, they were all groomsmen at my wedding.
Only the best.
Yeah. And so we just, let's just learn 90s covers. And I was telling someone at Tidballs, you know, at a show. I don't even know if it was when we were playing or when we were just at. And I was talking to someone, you know, I was like, yeah, we're doing a 90s cover band. And Tidball had me standing like right there. He's like, did you say you guys are doing a 90s cover band? I'm like, yeah, we're working on it. He's like, as soon as you guys are ready, man, let me know. I want you in here. I'm like, all right, man.
That's awesome.
So, like, I, you know, worked up enough songs to play a show and we just started.
Yeah. And it wouldn't have been hard.
No.
Because, again, Josh is a walking jukebox. It seems like he just knows everything. That doesn't take much of practice to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, just spent a lot of time in the garage in the hot summer and
yeah,
sweating it out.
But leading up to branching into the Peter the Freshman cover band thing, Chest Rockwell went for a solid decade, easily.
Yeah.
How do you sum up that long of being in the same band with the same people with no changes? Or
Once I was in, like, then we had Josh's cousin, David, joined us for a while playing keyboards, and he'd play third guitar sometimes.
Okay.
And, you know, and that was just kind of a natural move because he was all a friend with us. So right. It was just, you
made
know,
sense.
Made sense. And the keyboards, like, we did a lot of keyboard stuff prior to him joining in the studio on the songs just to add to the sound of the songs and the recording. And he joined, and, you know, it just kind of opened up that much more. And he could have third guitar sometimes. And, you know, he had a girlfriend that lived in California and moved to California, and that's how he left the band.
Right.
But he was there at the beginning of a Peter the Freshman, too. So, you know, we kind of missed that because there's a bunch of songs with keyboard that we could cover that we used to love.
Yeah, I think I remember you all mentioning that before.
But did
throughout the time of Chest, especially in the beginning to mid stages of like what you would say the peak time of things happening music scene wise, Cage was blowing up, all the bands from this area were starting to get signed and go on to bigger, better things. Did Chest Rockwell ever leap into that world and try to get into management and maybe a record deal? Because your all's records are stellar stuff, man.
Josh sent it out to a lot of records, like even overseas. He was sending it out to a lot of places. And when you're young, you want the record deal. You think that's it. But, you know, I guess, like, really our music's not... Musicians appreciate our music a lot more than regular, like, quote-unquote regular
fan
people.
Fan base would be more grassroots-built.
Because it's
kind of music stuff,
you know, off time stuff, and a lot of weird changes, and some of them were quite long songs.
But you still had an incredible sound and work ethic, I guess, that I would think somebody would have picked it up.
I mean, we were,
but I guess you all didn't really try.
Like we didn't
super hard.
No,
right?
Like we weren't out there trying to sell ourselves or anything. We were like. Got our music to some guy in like Norway or something somehow, and somehow we got put on this list for like an Italian Progressive Music Award, and we were like finalists.
You win awards in Italy?
We were a finalist for the award, you know. And there's bands like a band that I like called Dredge. They were on there, and like Mastodon was on there, and like, you know, so there's all these bands that I know about, and it's like, you know, we're finalists for the same award that they are, but, you know, of course we didn't win or anything, but it was just kind of cool to be part of that,
right?
But I don't think that we really tried to push a whole lot. We just kind of played this music the way we play it because that's how we want to do it. And if people liked it, they did. And if they didn't, well, then they didn't have to listen to us, I don't guess.
So you are not on the album Back to Square One?
I am not.
Okay. So that would be the first album?
Yes.
And it was just the three of them?
Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. I don't know why I didn't pick up on that the first time I listened to it. But, oh, you know, the first thing you gave me was that 45.
Yeah.
And that's great. If anybody doesn't have that, you guys still have some
of
those.
Yeah, Josh still has.
You guys actually have a lot of stuff. But for anyone out there listening to this, if you've not heard Josh Hines' episodes and now Seth Wilson's episode, you've got to check out Chest Rockwell. Even though the work is a decade, give or take, past, you know, it's stellar stuff. It's as far as Bowling Green music scene goes, this band is definitely cream of the crop.
I have one person thinks that.
I know a lot of people do. It's just we are a very filled scene of bands.
Yeah.
And there is that moment where things kind of trends come and go and all that stuff. But I feel like you guys have been through it all.
Like we've
and you're still around.
We've always been the band that's been more appreciated by the other bands. Because they, you know, understand more.
It's like
what
Rush,
we're doing.
Right? It's a music thing.
And, you know,
we don't really follow
any trends.
Chest
along
Rockwell
the way.
Versus the world.
Like, you know, we haven't really changed. We've progressed through our career.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you get older, you have to progress. And things have changed a little bit. But as far as, you know, like the core of what we do, it's not.
I mean, this record came
really
out
changed.
In 2006.
That was the first one that was the first album I was on.
Right. So, Chest Rockwell versus the World is your first debut because, like you said, you joined the band in 2005. This record came out in 2006. Dude, that's been a while.
It has. Like that record.
But yet they hold
everything
up
in there.
You know, it's good. And I listened to these a while back because when Josh did his episode, he gave me all the stuff. I'm like, that's great. I'm used to pulling up local bands online because everybody's like, go to our SoundCloud or Facebook page or whatever. And that's where I'm used to getting stuff. But then I dove headfirst into, I go to Matt's often, Mellow Matt's, and I'll buy a local record just about every time I go in.
You have more CDs.
Yeah, you are not a collector.
You have more CDs that I am on than I do.
Posters, or you don't like taking pictures. You're a very interesting musician to me. You're supposed to be like almost like a used car salesman. You are the product. You realize that, right?
I just, play guitar and
and that's what's cool about you. And you're like, I just want to play.
Yeah.
You don't really dive into the stuff.
Not really.
You're definitely a team player. And, when things can happen, they happen. And you're happy to be there. But you love playing so much that you really don't care
about all
the other stuff. You just want to play and you don't care about. And I've learned this personally recently with you. It's about playing and having a good time.
Yep.
And you've brought that back out of me.
You're welcome.
You're very kind. But, I went through a horrible time and you saved it. So, thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Publicly, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sorry to the rest of the world.
Yeah, well,
But, yeah.
Why do you have to be such a dick about everything?
Because it's fun.
I don't think it's funny. I'm going to have to stop tape and just cut that out.
Snap me around a little bit. Can we get an edit on this?
So, Chess Rockwell, obviously, is still a band that also, on the side, a lot of people will know as Peter the Freshman because of the booking ability of that band.
Yeah.
You can get into a lot of venues
and we can cover
Chess Rockwell wouldn't.
We can cover a lot of time. Like, we can do a 4-hour show if
you can. And I've had the honor of filling in for Nick Rouse not that long ago on drums. And it's not easy to walk into that situation unrehearsed and wing it.
But you did an awesome job.
I mean, I knew most of the songs because I toured in 90s cover bands in early 2000s. I was like, I've done this before. I can do this. You know? But as a band, as a unit, you guys have really stood for a long time and you're still out there. And as of last weekend, I saw you guys as Peter the Freshman. But you played Chess Rockwell songs.
Yeah, we figured, why the hell not? Let's just slip
to
a couple
me,
of
that
these
was
in.
The perfect way to do it. Because, again, not everyone in the crowd is really paying attention. A cover band is a jukebox.
Yeah.
But there might be somebody out there, music fan, musician, or a friend of, whatever, and they immediately are like, damn, that was a good song. That was cool. And it happened to me. I was sitting outside at Rib Liquors at the picnic table. I can barely see the stage.
You're out there running around with little kids.
All the doors were open, and you all played an original. And I could, I knew it because Josh said, we're going to play it. We got all this new material. We're going to play an original.
Yeah.
And I was like, right on, man. That's cool. You should. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So that's great. So, to sum up your history with this group, what's your take on what you all have contributed local music scene-wise?
I mean, we just play what we want to play because that's how we want to play it. damn the torpedoes.
That's Tom Petty.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know.
You're proud of what you've done, though. I mean, clearly you should be.
I wouldn't still be doing it if I wasn't.
Ah, of course. Therefore, that was your way of saying that was a stupid question.
So it was a nice way. It was tactful.
But I just feel like I should stay on this topic for a long time because you can't blaze through 14 years in a 10-minute conversation.
I mean, we had some shows, did some songs, we're good, whatever.
Well,
we got to play places like we played the Muse.
Yeah.
In Nashville.
Go through the list of, not just locally speaking, which you kind of covered earlier, What has Chest Rockwell done over the years outside of maybe the music scene or within region stuff? Like, you all have done some Weekend Warrior type touring,
yeah,
right?
And we've done Muse in Nashville, was a really cool place back in the day, which I think you said it's a pizza place now, like a Domino's.
It's a Domino's, yeah.
That place was a dive. It was it was kind of gross,
like,
in there.
Like, 328's gone, and...
But it was a fun place to play.
What was that other place down on Ellison? I don't know. It was a coffee shop. It's gone. There's so much stuff in Nashville that's... Yeah. Just part of history now. Cannery's closing. So I drove past the Cannery.
Where are they closing?
I don't know.
Because there's a show there on the 30th.
I literally was in Nashville yesterday, and I drove down Cannery Row, and I drove past the Cannery, and I was like, oh, that's closing soon.
There's
and
a
they'll
show,
probably demolish it. And,
which this will be after this airs, I know, but there's show on the 30th, and like... 3 weeks that I'm going to at the Cannery, so they're not closed before then.
No, but I just know that they're going to close eventually. I'm assuming in the year 2019. But what's the one next door to it? The Mercy Lounge, Mercury Lounge?
I haven't been to the Cannery yet. I haven't got to experience that.
You've never gone?
No, not there.
It's what you would expect. Very 328-like, but not the shotgun room. It's more of a square. It's a cool room, though. I got to my favorite memory, which this is, you don't care because this is your episode. I went to the Cannery once because they had a drum clinic for Stephen Perkins of Jane's Addiction.
Okay.
And I'm in the audience and he's up there doing his thing, which all drum clinics start with them just coming out and playing along with tracks. You know, they'll play along with the hits.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, he sat there playing drums to Been Caught Stealing and Jane Says or whatever. And it's great because as a drummer, you're watching your heroes 5 feet in front of you playing drums at full volume to a track they played on with a legendary band. Well, he does his little thing and then he starts just like doing drum stuff. And he's like, this next thing I'm going to do, I need a volunteer. I think before he even finished that sentence, my hand was in the air. And I got to go up on stage with Stephen Perkins of Jane's Addiction and play drums, his drum set, while he hopped behind like a percussion section. And it was just me and him. And he did this like thing where he's like, you know, this is something I like to do at home when I'm practicing. And he'd start out with like feeling his heartbeat. And then he'd start a shaker in the rhythm of whatever his heartbeat was. And then he'd be like, and when you feel comfortable, you just come in. It was like a dream. It was like a dream when I look back on it, but it really happened. So, boom.
Boom.
I played drums with Steve Perkins at Cannery. And that was like one of the few and only times I've ever been there. But it's actually a pretty cool place. It's got Nashville history to it.
Yeah, you know, I'll find that.
You'll
in
like
a couple
it.
Weeks.
Yeah. But anyway, you guys did a lot of cool shit.
A little bit here and there.
I think you made a pretty good name for yourself around town. And I think as things change and go and come and go and all that stuff, I think you're on the up right now, I think, because you're starting to play more. You do have a Chest Rockwell show booked. And I think the tides are going to shift back.
Like, me and Josh are, you know, pretty dead set on recording.
You what, should be.
What new? Like, we have new material that's like 4 or 5 years old.
That's
that
crazy.
We haven't recorded.
I can't believe people can do that. I can't do that.
And me and Josh are pretty dead set on getting that recorded before the end of this year.
Yeah.
You know. So, but when you have four people in a band, it's schedules and kids and jobs.
I know.
And, you know, Rouse works third shift and. It's hard to get schedules aligned, you know, and then people have
and
other,
yet you're
and people
in
have
bands.
Other bands, you know, and it's kind of first come, first serve basis, so
it
whoever
is,
asked first. And
I find it odd. I couldn't do it.
It's actually not
I've
that
tried
hard.
To do it, but it's hard to do. I just don't do it anymore. But yeah, you're in two bands now, and we'll get to that. Josh is literally in, what, three?
47.
I'm going with three. Josh plays drums in Dos Cobra. Josh plays guitar and lead vocal in Peter the Freshman and Chest Rockwell. Josh plays bass in Bass Invaders.
So
four.
He's also a guitar player for his metal project,
Black Metal
by Hargum. And I'm pretty excited to see them out at some point because that's he's met up with a drummer who's a badass.
Yeah.
And Stewie is doing vocals for that. So I can't wait till they get that going.
That'll be very interesting to see.
I want to see that.
I think Josh wanted to do a part two Sound Atlas so that he could come up to date with all the stuff he's got going on.
That'd be like a yearly. This is the yearly Josh Hines episode.
So here's what's coming up for 2020.
Yeah.
But you're in a band with a lot of great dudes, but everyone, like especially Josh. It's not just work schedules. Josh is in a lot of other musical things. But you decided that you would attempt that with me.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting thing to tell, being that I am the host of this. I try to scatter stories in just to talk to people and be relatable, but we're actually in a band together.
Yeah.
And the reason is because my band fell apart because someone quit. I had 7 dates on the calendar. I had to cancel everything. It was a mess. And you were one of the first people to contact me to not only say, hey, man, keep your head up. It'll be fine. I'll play guitar for you.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? Why do you want to mess with playing guitar for me? You're in a great band. And you, I remember this much of it. You were like, I just love playing. I just want to play.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of doing something else, maybe outside my comfort zone, and being the sole guitar player. Because you knew I wanted to keep it
yeah.
a trio and all that stuff.
Power, the old power trio.
The old power trio. But you ended up joining Captain Dean. Unfortunately, we didn't make a record. We were going to. We were going to keep
going. We kind of did.
We were going to keep going. I was going to keep that going. And you brought in a drummer, and I brought in another guitarist friend that I was like, well, it can be a 4-piece. That'll be cool. It'll be different. So we gave that a shot, and we had 3 gigs booked. By the second gig, it was down to you and me and the drummer. But the drummer that we had and rehearsed with, if I can timeline this correctly, I'll do it. You and I started talking in the fall of 2016 or 17.
17, yeah.
And by December, we were rehearsing. And the drummer you brought in was Nick, who played with Crimson Croft. And I brought in Nathan Welch, who had played guitar with me years ago, but it never evolved into anything.
Yeah.
I was trying to redeem that. I wanted Nathan to be a part of it because I loved him. I loved his guitar playing, and I thought he would be a great fit with you, musically speaking.
Yeah.
And you brought in Nick because you knew Nick through your job, and he was a great drummer. And so we got together and started rehearsing, and things were going really good. We got rolling fast.
Yep.
Because I had, at that point, 7 albums, but I was like, if we can just learn a handful of these songs, that's enough to get on stage, and then we'll start writing stuff. And we did. We had 6 originals. So I booked 3 gigs by January or February or something like that. And 2 or 3 weeks before the first gig, Nick quit the band.
Yep.
Which was a wonderful experience for me because this just kept happening to me. And it was embarrassing because I kept having to call these venues and cancel shows and look like a moron. But anyway, we found a way to keep going. You and I got Evan Wooden from the band Angry Planet to come in and play drums. And he was perfect.
Fantastic guy right there.
And he couldn't join the band because he lives like north of Litchfield. So he's like 2 hours away in another time zone. And it was just been a nightmare to try and work that in as a band.
Yep.
But Evan was kind enough to learn the songs that we had on a set list in order to play these 3 gigs that we had booked. This is why I deemed it the final show, because I was like, I'm going to play these 3 gigs and then that's it. I have to kill this name. It's got too much bad juju at this point. Too many people have quit. I've had too much issues come of it. But there, you were always there. When Captain Dean came to an end, you were there, and you immediately said, we should keep doing something
yeah.
new. Start over, start from scratch. And after I sat still for a bit, I took you up on that offer. Now, originally, I played drums.
Yeah, I was going
to have I was like, I'm going to go back to playing drums because that's what I'm good at. And you contacted Shelby Smith. And Shelby came up to your house to jam with us one day, or a couple times.
Yeah, a few times.
And it didn't gel very good for me. I liked some of the stuff, but some of that stuff he was bringing in was very vile jive like, and it's drumming wise not something I can really hang with.
Yeah,
I like it, but I'm not into it enough to do it. So unfortunately, that didn't work out.
But I'm really sad that he's.
He started working
on a bunch of stuff, and
he has got something going.
He's
got coming
out at some point.
But eventually, I end up back on bass because a friend of mine passed away, and we were asked to perform at a show in honor of her and a benefit, so to speak. And you and Evan agreed to do it, but Evan couldn't do like. The first show. We were asked to do a show, and Evan was cool with that. But then John Tidball, it was like, hey, I see Captain Dean's back together. And I had to explain to him, it's just for this one show. And he's like, well, do you want another one? And he offered us to play at Tidball's. And I was like, well, that'd be great. Because then we can get our feet wet and then go into the tribute show and nail it and not be bad, you know. But we couldn't do that. Evan couldn't do it. So Ian Harper played drums. And he learned, what, 10 songs?
Yeah.
And we played the Tidball show, which I absolutely loved because we got to play with the Mighty Jabronis. And that night will go down in history for me as one of the best shows ever.
Fun band.
You have been by my side through a lot in just a short amount of time. And I'm very thankful. Honestly, dude, I mean that. Because you really helped me through a difficult time. And you've kept me... in music, like on a positive note.
You're even welcome, though, and I'm sorry to the rest of the world again.
It's okay. This is who you are. But enough about me. We decided to keep going. We jammed with Ian Harper a few times.
Yeah.
And it seemed like as something from starting from scratch, it was really cool because it was a different realm for both of us.
Yeah, it was a little bit more bluesy than
very bluesy. We had that jazz song.
He's a fantastic blues guy.
He's a fantastic blues drummer. He's a fantastic drummer.
Yeah.
But he's much younger than us, and his schedule was becoming a conflicting thing. And this was also around the holidays. So you knew Corey Link and suggested we jam with Corey Link, and we did. And we immediately became a band, right there on the spot.
Just kind of happened.
But again, we started from scratch. We had just a few riffs to present to him.
Well, I've got more than a few.
At the time, to get started. Why do you have to be a jackass about it?
It was fun.
That's what you do. So anyway, you suggested Corey Link play drums, and we've been with Corey since December of 2018. So 2018 for you and me was kind of spotty.
Yeah.
We played the three shows at the beginning of the year, and then there was nothing.
A lot of text messaging.
In the summer, but we did stay in touch, and you kept me afloat through all of that, and I really appreciate it. But now we are a band. As of taping this, we've been a band for a few months. Since January, I guess.
Well, I think it was like the first time we jammed with Corey was like the...
It was December right before 15th
or
16th
Christmas.
Yeah. It was literally right before Christmas because Ian couldn't jam one night and you and I still wanted to play music just for fun. And you called Corey and I was like,
no, you called. Like, I think you called Corey. Corey was looking for another gig. He'd been playing.
Yeah.
For Balter and he'd been playing with the Pet.
We had talked at one point. I tried to get Corey to play with the Black Bloods. Because they were auditioning. Like, Corey and I went through a weird thing. We auditioned for the same bands, like, one summer. I guess it was the summer of 2018. We both auditioned for Black Bloods. We both, kind of talked to the idea of playing in Bass Invaders.
Yeah.
He auditioned, but I didn't. But, yeah, we had been talking, but not on terms of playing music together. But you suggested him to me, because I didn't know him. And I was like,
I knew he was a drummer. He's looking for a gig, man. Right.
So between you knowing him and suggesting him, and I reached out to him trying to help him get gigs. Well, lo and behold, I got him a gig with us.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got together with Corey, and that band took off pretty fast with what we had. And just every time we would jam, we would write something new. And it didn't take long, but by what? February or March of 2019, we were established as El Astronauta.
Yeah.
Which is still shocking to me that you all like that name.
The funny thing is, so in the group text messages, everybody does, there's the El Astronauta group text message, and we text back and forth, and I call them names and tell them they're stupid and tell them they suck all the time.
Every day.
So
pretty much every day.
They were shooting names back and forth, and I never had anything to offer.
There were some really
except
winners.
Well, there was someone would suggest a name, I'd be like, no. Like, no, I have no explanation, say nothing but no.
Yep.
No. You know, Corey suggested a name, no.
But what shocked us is you had nothing to say. Yeah,
I had no input. And, you know,
you're that guy.
Over a couple of days, another name, I'd be like, no. Then all of a sudden, you're like, I think Dean's like, well, what about El Astronauta? And I was like, I don't hate it.
That's exactly what you said.
I was like, I just texted back, I don't hate it. So that was, I guess, equivalent to yes.
Well, yeah, you and Corey both were like, that's cool. And so I immediately Google, you know, you have to Google the name. You have to Google the name with the word band next to it and scour the globe to see if it exists, because I refuse to have that. Well, there are bands by the name of El Astronauta, but they're all in South America. They're all hip-hop artists in Peru.
Songs are called El Astronauta or something.
Yeah, because in Spanish, you know, it's the astronaut, and so anybody in Spanish that sings about UFOs, they're going to use that term, because that's their term. So we've completely ripped that off.
Yeah.
We are the American El Astronauta band. But yeah, we have been a band for a while. We have, as taping this, I think 12 original songs. At some point, we're going to make a record.
Some point.
But you are juggling being in Chest Rockwell and El Astronauta at the same time. And you're doing it. You're pulling it off. I know it's
so far
hectic and stuff. But, I mean, yeah, we haven't had like overlapping bookings and stuff. But, you know, we're both older. We have kids. We do what we can.
Yeah.
But since being in this band, and I hate to ask you this, being that I'm sitting here, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. You know, we got some songs and play some shows.
Doing some shows.
I just want to play guitar, man. That's just what I want. That's all I want.
I know. That's all you ever say. And I'm like, okay.
Just want to play.
I'd love for you to be more involved in, you know, like promotional
things. Well, see, I don't have to, because you're like the ultimate promoter.
I'm not, so, though. I'm no, not you, the you ultimate promoter.
You're like, you're throwing it out there all the time. So I'm like, it's pretty cool.
You know why? Because somebody has to do it.
Hey.
You don't get an audience if you just put on the day of the show, hey, we're playing at Tidballs tonight. That
you know
work.
Everybody, so you get shows.
That's
and you're,
true.
You promote
everybody
everything.
Knows me.
So I don't have to do anything except for show up and play guitar, and that's all I want to do.
I got shit the other day.
Right, and you talk shit to me about all the time.
Dude, I talk shit to you because you fucking throw shit at me on a daily basis. Because that's who you are. Do you have to piss or something? You
no,
look
I'm
very uncomfortable.
I'm always uncomfortable when I'm sitting down for a long
time. Because you're a very
time.
Tall man.
Yes.
Is that it? Do you hate being told how tall you are?
On occasion, yes.
Do you hate how many people walk up to you and go, oh my God.
Yeah, so funny story. Evansville, Indiana. There is a place called Landhucks, total dive bar. We, you know, they had the punk rock night. Like I think, you know, during the week or most time they had country shows or whatever. But you know, they'd have a punk rock night like once a month or whatever. And we played there a few times. We as Chest Rockwell goes up there one night. We walk in, and there's a dude sitting at the bar, and first thing we hear is, "Well, look at this big motherfucker here." And so, you know, we still talk about that to this day. That was just, you know, that was the entrance
tall.
Into the, yeah.
You're a very tall man.
I'm bigger than your average bear, yeah.
You are, because I'm average. I'm an average man. And when I see pictures of us, it's funny. Because I'm used to being the tallest guy on the photo. And when I see a picture of me next to you, I was like, wow, am I 5'7"? What is this?
Yes, yes, you are.
But no, I am 6 foot, almost 6 foot one, and you tower over me.
And I am 6'6".
You're almost evil.
Of guitar playing fury.
Yes, you are. Seth, you're a phenomenal guitar player.
It's been an honor, not only as a fan
of watching you from the audience in Chest Rock, Will and Peter the Freshman, but to work with you is a challenge because you come up with really...
Because I'm a dick.
Maybe, but you'd come up with some really tasty riffs. I'm not a very skilled bass player. I'm a great drummer. I'm not ashamed to say that, but I'm a decent bass player. And I have to come home sometimes and sit here in this damn room for hours and play like a riff that you throw at me. And it takes me that long to just get it. Because you write good stuff, man. But you're into what, like the things you're into these days. I know you like what, Mastodon. You're into like the doom stoner rock.
I've been listening to like a bunch of stoner rock stuff. I love instrumental, like Mogwai, post rock.
Can we be known as sober rock?
Sober rock, yeah, whatever. Or couple beers rock.
You have a few beers. I do not. I very seldomly have a beer with you.
You know, I listen to a wide variety of music.
And honestly, I'm assuming when you came into this world with me, I know in Chest Rockwell and stuff, you kind of have a sound. You have a thing. I would think Josh comes to the table with a lot of the music, lyrics, and stuff like that.
Yeah, Josh does all the lyrics because Josh has an amazing ability to take... Like, one of our albums is about the Iliad, you know, and the Odyssey.
Yes.
And you could listen to it, and you really wouldn't know that unless, you know, I just told you. So
yeah, we have to read
it. Cat out of the bag. But, you know, so he has a great way to, like, ability to write lyrics that are about something specific to him, but can be, you know.
But musically speaking, in that band, your role is to kind of just be a team player. In this band... I've written, come to the table with stuff.
I've written some stuff, there's some Chest Rockwell stuff.
I'm not saying you haven't, but in this particular band, being the only guitar player, you have that freedom to walk in and be like, I got this riff idea.
I mean, you know, there's...
You have thrown a lot of riff ideas at me, and they've become songs, you know?
There's some riffs that, you know, I write that might be a Chest Rockwell riff. I'm going to take that to them. Or, all right, that's not a Chest Rockwell riff, you know? Like, it's
something.
There's a certain, like, sound that Chest Rockwell has and a certain, like, you know, style that some stuff that I write is not going to fit.
And as Captain Dean, I was very strict about everything had to be in drop D, and I was very strict about a certain sound element. But Nell Astronauta, we started from scratch.
Yeah.
So we have songs in standard tuning. We have songs in drop D. We have a variety of tones and sounds. I mean, you have a completely different setup for this band. You have your own pedal board and amp setup just for this band.
Yes.
And that's pretty cool.
I play a completely different guitar.
Right. Like, in this band, you're using a Fender Telecaster. Yeah. But in Chest Rockwell and Peter, it seems like you play the SG or the Les Paul You have played the Strat.
I used to play a Strat, but I got rid of the Strat.
Oh, you got rid of it?
Yeah, that's how I got the SG.
Oh.
I have three nice guitars.
Yes, you do.
So I play the Les Paul and Chest Rockwell.
Yep.
Because it just sounds right. And then I play the SG and Peter because I can get a lot more sound on my SG just because the way it's set up.
Right.
And then I'll play the Telecaster with El Astronauta.
Which works because we have things that float in realms of like blues, jazz, but then we've got punk.
And Telecaster is just straight up rock.
We've got drop D heavy stuff. And it's a great experience, man. It really is. It's cool.
It's just fun to be able to play, you know, of my three gigging nice guitars, I can play each one for something different.
Right. But like the idea? Is that kind of the point of why you wanted to hook up with me and do something else? Is to be able to have that freedom of I can do this over here and I can do this over here.
I just wanted to play, man. That's like on my gravestone. I just wanted to play, man.
Yeah, I'll make sure that gets done. But anyway, to wrap that up, we are El Astronauta.
Yeah.
And with Corey Link, and we've been going strong. We've done really good.
Yeah.
We are on the verge, as we're taping this, we're just hours away from playing at Tidballs for the second time.
Yeah.
a week from now, we are playing at the Exit Inn, which is a dream come true for both of us.
I don't know how that happened, but if I was a part after then,
what? As you said, I know everybody, and I made that happen. But we've done some really cool stuff, not only when you joined Captain Dean, but becoming a Lastronaut. I think you and I have a great working relationship.
Yeah.
Our friendship's kind of strange.
It's kind of rocky sometimes, or whatever.
But we have our moments. But on the side, let's get into some other cool things about you. You have a... And I interviewed Nathan Fielder,
yeah,
which was great.
Good dude.
I look at the local music scene, I've always said it's more than just the venues and the bands, which is, of course, the staple of it. But we have to pay honor to the music stores, the publications, the radio, the television. It all plays a role.
Yeah.
You guys aren't music stores, but you're musician go-to people for equipment, repairs, things of that nature.
I tinker a little
bit. So Nathan does a lot of guitar repair with Fielder's Choice Guitars, which is his own shop that he has. You have Big Riff. Was it Big Riff Guitar?
Well, there's kind of like it's Big Riff Guitar Repair, which is what I have.
Griff?
Big Riff Guitar Repair, which I have on Facebook. And then I've kind of been doing some mods on pedals and building pedals here and there.
The pedal thing's kind of new. You're a big pedal fan.
Yeah.
You love pedals. Every time I go in a music store, I'll take a picture of the pedal cabinet.
But you didn't do that yesterday.
And be like, don't you wish you were here?
Yeah,
I can feel you drooling.
A little bit. I have to wipe my phone
off. You're very into the pedals thing. But you do modifications on guitar pedals, which is something you've gotten really good at.
It's all right.
It's okay. You do other work, which I know you've done work for other people.
Sometimes I fix some amps. Like, I just kind of try to get in there and figure it out and try to
electrocute
myself.
See, Nathan's more of the guitar, body, neck.
Nathan's a luthier, man. He does the woodwork.
You're more of the electronics type of thing. Like, you can do guitar setups and the basics on guitar stuff, but you do seem to be more in the realm of wiring, rewiring, rebuilding innards.
Doing funky stuff that you want done.
Which is great because I like it. When you walked in here, I was like, hey, this space needs some work. People bring shit to me to paint, and then I bring shit to you.
I think that's how, like, I remember before we even started playing together, I think that's how I got the idea to, after I saw Captain Dean fell apart, but you contacted me. It's like, hey, man, I'm painting this guitar for this guy.
Yeah.
And he's got these pickups he wants me to put in, but I don't really feel comfortable. Can you take care of it?
Yeah, it was a very interesting guitar because the guy I ordered, I mean, it was a piece of shit, BC Rich, cheap type Warlock, right? But it meant something to him because it was his as a kid, you know. You still have your first guitar kind of thing, so you kind of can understand that. But he really, really wanted this guitar to be restored, so I had to meticulously paint it in the hardest time of the year to paint stuff. It just kept cracking on me, and I had to sand it to start over. But I finally got the damn thing painted, and it looked great. And then he ordered brand new perfect condition shit that had to be completely wired, like new pickups, like EMG style pickups. The wires were like top of the line quality things, right? And I was like, I am not doing this shit. So I immediately contacted you to handle that, and I guess that's how we did get started recently. I thought we were already talking at that point.
No, we weren't. That was just...
You know what? We were, because you came to one of my shows at the A-Frame. Remember that? We opened for the Bass Invaders. So you were there to see Josh, and I was there, and I played, and I think we talked that night. So that might have been when we reconnected.
I think, like, at that point, I was kind of like, you know, if they ever need another guitar, I ought to tell them if they ever need another guitar player to holler at me, but... You know, then I saw that the band
fate
broke up.
Ran its course. Yeah, it worked out great. But that's what you're known for on the side.
Yeah.
And I know you've done work for like Chris Robinson and other random people, I guess, like Cody maybe. Or who around town have you done work for or with?
Robert Ray, I fixed one of his bass amps. Mm-hmm. Supposed to fix another one, but he's having trouble hooking up with me to give it to me or whatever. busy lives, busy time of the year. I know how that goes.
Yeah.
Robbie from Wolf on Cosmonauts. Mm-hmm. I've worked on his Firebird a little bit.
That's a nice guitar.
Yeah. And actually, I worked on it when Matt DeVore had it, too. But, you know, that's...
But a lot of people, like what I said about Nathan Fielder, a lot of people trust in you to bring their equipment to you and know that it's not only going to get done,
and I'm pretty
it's going to be
too.
Better when they get it back.
I think I undersell myself, actually.
Well, that's just who you are,
whatever. Though. Whatever. Because, you know, it does, honestly, it doesn't
You're
take a long time.
You're extremely laid-back personality guy, so it's cool.
Just make a few extra bucks here and there. It's all that really matters. And
yep. A few extra something. Bucks to supply your pedal fix.
Well, yeah, Daddy needs his medicine.
I always think at night, do you lay in bed clicking your feet like you're stomping on pedals?
I don't know. I do wake up with cramps, so maybe that's what happens.
Your legs sore a little bit. Well, that's about everything, isn't it?
I guess.
Have we missed anything?
I don't think so.
When it comes to local music in this town, you've been a part of it for a long time. What are you a fan of out there? Because I know that you do attend shows.
On occasion, I attend shows. Like, I used to attend shows all the time back in the day. Then you get married and you start
You go see a lot of your friends' bands, you know, and a lot of bands that you all play with or close friends to you guys or your fans of. Who literally stands out to you in this scene? Personally, as a music fan, who are you a fan of?
I haven't seen him yet, but hopefully this will change soon.
I think it is in about a month.
Yeah, but Chick with the Dire Sisters, I'm really digging. Like, which I know everybody says this. Everybody says, you know, that.
But it's true.
But he's got a real cool thing going
on,
man. It is.
If you've seen the video, it's probably like, man, that's cool.
But yeah,
you have to witness it in person. Like, it's literally the ultimate rock and roll performance.
And Chick's a great person, and he's got a
and
cool
you guys
thing.
Do a lot of the gear, you know.
You're
both gear nerds, so
he's way farther into it than I am.
Oh yeah,
I'm kind of a little jelly about it, but you know, whatever. he's got some nice stuff laying around in there.
Yeah,
I've bought a couple things off of him here and there, but
well, then you wouldn't have money for pedals.
Well, I mean, I bought some pedals off of him.
Who else out there, past or present?
Man, hard questions.
You've seen a lot of good stuff over the years.
Like I said, I'm excited to see Josh's By Hargum, his Black Metal project.
Right.
If he, like, you know, when they can, I don't know where they're going to play, but I'll definitely be there.
I don't know. I would think Rockies would welcome that.
Or A-Frame would maybe even, too.
A-Frame would definitely let him in.
But, you know, anything Josh is a part of, is I usually go to, because that's, you know, he's like my brother.
Absolutely. It was not only, like, your bandmate, he's an inspiration to watch, and especially, I'm assuming, if you're watching him in something else, you're probably beaming with pride to see your friend doing these other things.
Yeah, it's fun.
He just excels at everything he does.
And you know,
you jelly about that too?
A little bit. Well, which might have been riding his coattails for the past 14 years. You never know. But
that's about it, huh?
Yeah, like I don't get out as much as I used to, just because family
you've
life.
Got, yeah, you've got two young kids and a wife and a job. And
I gotta pick my battles, you know. Like, I'd rather go out for me to play than I would to go see other people play.
That is an excellent point.
On occasion, I'm able to get out and go see some stuff.
I totally understand that.
But it's
I've been able to balance both.
But
for
I do
a while
have to say,
lately,
like, the music scene is. It's strong, man. There's a bunch of good bands, and even though I might not particularly like the band or like their style, you know, I can recognize that they're good musicians, or
exactly,
you know, they're putting it out there. So it's a good place to be, man. I'm proud to be part of the Bowling Green music
you
scene.
You are definitely not only a part of it; you've been a staple in this music scene for quite some time.
Just been the big dark shadow in the back is what I've
exactly.
been.
Exactly. Oh, that's that tall guy. Yeah.
Oh, that's who that is.
Well, Seth, thank you for not only taking time to make your Sound Atlas episode, finally,
after months and months.
Well, I mean, I've been hosting it for a while, and
you host a podcast.
Your bandmates have been like, "When are you going to get Seth to do one of these?" Like, I don't know when he feels like it, and tonight you felt like it.
Yeah, I got a free couple minutes.
What have we missed before I say goodbye?
I don't know.
Clearly, I've missed something. Because I spent too much time talking about me.
That's how
it's
you are,
all though. About me.
It's always about Dean. It's his world. We just live in it.
Well, you know, you should be happy that you're allowed to.
Well, I guess. For now.
My world. I feel like I've asked you all the right questions. You had a short history.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do have a short history.
I mean, it's easy to have a short history when you're in the same band for 15 fucking years.
Yeah, like, I was like, in this band, we played some songs, yeah, whatever.
Like, I ran into that problem with John King. It's like, you were in Sixth Floor for 20 years. How do you cram 20 years into a 30-minute part of the segment, you know?
Yep.
It's like it all blurs together. You made 6 records, played a ton of shows, same name, same people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to do.
Yeah, John had a good episode. I enjoyed that one.
I've enjoyed every episode so far. They're all good.
And actually, like, I listened to the last episode was Summer.
Summer Graves, and People Proof.
We played at PG's in Evansville. Chess Rockwell did.
Oh, was she there?
I don't know if she was the one that booked or not. You'd have to ask Josh because he does all the booking. Because even in that band,
she was only there for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing there, though. We played Evansville quite a lot.
I'd have to listen back to the timeline. Or maybe we can do a show with People Proof and you can ask her.
Maybe. Can we, like, Facebook in questions that you can ask on episodes if you tell us who you're going
to... you know, I guess you could. When this airs, you can, like, highlight it. You can tag her in it and be like, hey, did we play there when you were there? But as we've been recording this episode, I've been playing Chest Rockwell in the background. You probably can't hear it because I'm blocking the radio. But now there's pure silence, and this is what I hate
so
the most.
So I guess it's just time
time to end it. But we are on our way to play an El Astronauta show at Tidballs, and I'm very excited.
I think I might need a taco before I play tonight.
I will go in the kitchen and make some tacos.
Whip me up some tacos.
Seth Wilson, Chest Rockwell, Peter the Freshman, and El Astronauta, lead guitarist, guitarist extraordinaire,
use
the tall
loosely,
guy
lead guitarist
that nobody
loosely
knows. And the guy that runs Big Riff Guitar Repair, go see him for all your pedal needs.
Badassery.
Seth, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.